It's been called the biggest legal scandal in Pennsylvania history. A pair of state judges charged with accepting $2.6 million in bribes and kickbacks in exchange for sending thousands of juvenile offenders to two private detention centers. One of those former judges is now on trial in Scranton, as NPR's Joel Rose reports.
In opening statements this morning, federal prosecutors said Chivarella treated his office like a money-making machine. Along with another ex-judge, Chivarella is accused of accepting bribes and kickbacks from friends who got government contracts to build a pair of privately owned detention centers. And Chivarella is accused of funneling hundreds of kids as young as 10 years old into detention, even when their crimes didn't warrant it.
American media is a business, and it has a mission, not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with the capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And it's a good day. It's Sean Kennedy reporting you from the internet for Monday, January the 3rd, 2011. And that's right, you're listening to Newsreel, the WOG Global Sitrep on core political tyranny, technology, and trends for your headspace and timing. Rant Media is taking stand, and with spam and all the kind of people named Stan inside of Second Life for Rant Media, who is taking a stand for free speech today. And just by listening and distributing this program, you are too. You can follow up on all these news stories, and you can check my facts by going to my live journal. And you can get there by going to sean_kennedy.livejournal.com. This would be a free podcast that could be heard on Rant Radio Talk, RedMercury.SESRN1, Wild Bunch Radio, KJAG Radio, Osprey Networks, Creek Radio, iTunes, Podcast.com, Podcast Alley, and every Thursday night you can show up inside of Second Life at 7 p.m. And then you can wait for me to unfuck my computer after Skype completely removes the ability to broadcast audio through it. And then you can hang around, and while all the other people leave, you can claim to the fact that you are, in fact, the most hardcore person ever. Because you're just going to hang out here with the faith that Sean's going to, you know, unscrew up his life and his system and stuff and reinstall his drivers so that he can come back only an hour and a half late in order to try to start to do the show at grid 155-74-666. And the people who are the most hardcore ever are Agent Dak, Avamode, Anthony L., Surix, Gualo, Cade, Kimmy, Morps, Nyx, and Rain Marsh Devil. And, of course, my beautiful and talented co-host, Sumerian, was here on time, on target, ready to do his thing. But as we all know, he is in school, so he has a lot of homework that he had to do, and he couldn't stick around for hours on end, you know, pissing away the last of his life into a Second Life chat room. So he had to go. You know, he had to go. But that's okay. That's okay. I mean, these are the kind of things that happen. So, you know, we were able to press through it, and better late than ever. Good plan today, better bad plan tomorrow. So let's just get straight into the show. Hey, Sean, I got some feedback here. Hello, Sean! In this week's episode, you mentioned the songs on your playlist. I'm tired of you screaming at me. I want your music to scream at me. Please upload / send me your playlist. Thank you. Kind regards. Well, in a word, no. I'm not going to do that. Just because I don't really do that. I don't really know what the playlist is, to be really, really honest with you. Depending on the show, I have like this big folder full of psytrance. I give you some names. Astral Projection is one. 12,000 Mics is one. Infected Mushroom is one. The list goes on. I mean, a lot of them are compilation albums and stuff like that, but they're all Goa Psy Trance. So if you're interested in what I'm playing here, go check out, like, lots of, like, on Digitally Imported, there's a Goa Psy Trance channel. There's Goa Psy Radio, or Psytrance Radio, I think it is. There's a bunch of stations on there. Philosomatica is one that's on there. I mean, there's a bunch of different stations you can log into and check it out. So there is no actual one playlist, but I'm glad you like the music. It is some of the best music in the world, and I enjoy Goa Psy Trance music. Now, unfortunately, it's a shame that, the computer broke down, because I have some great Hog Hunt updates. I got to... Remember how he said that I wanted to go check out this hog hunting thing? Not because, you know, I'm a bad person, but just because, well, you know, apparently hogs go feral faster than any other animal. You know, like when you let them go, it's apparently you let these hogs go, 20 minutes later they grow 8 feet long, have tusks, black hair coming out their back, and they go completely evil. So apparently there's 4.1 million of these hogs or something like that running around in like southern Georgia and some of the areas of the states that are destroying crops, causing all kinds of problems. So I thought, hey, you know, if I was going to try the whole hog hunting thing, you know, with like a boar spear or something like that, that might be kind of neat to do. And I thought I'd get a bunch of feedback, but I didn't. I didn't get any feedback at all. So I commented on it last show, and good to form, we got some people sending in some feedback on this. So, hog hunt update. Hey, SKTFM. Here's a link to an outfit that does feral hog hunts. Notice the hunt with dogs where you kill the hog only with a knife. Rhino Roast sent it in. So I went to their website. It's blackcreeklodge.com. This is an option, this hunting with dogs, that is gaining popularity for many reasons. It's by far the most exciting and effective way to hunt hogs. Well, I don't know. This is from their website. When hunting them with dogs, no firearms or bows are allowed. Knives and rope only. Two guides go out with the hunters. They track dogs, normally curs, locate and bay a hog. The catch dogs will go and hold the hog until the hunters arrive. At this point, the hunters are running through the bush to try to get up on the hogs and dogs. Upon arrival, the guides will talk you through the process of gaining control, flipping the hog, and trying to tie it up or dispatching it on the site. This type of hunting is not for everyone and should be considered dangerous. Sometime it will be a young 70-pound boar or a 200-pound sow with a bad attitude or a 300-pound boar that will take everybody to flip and tie. We use this technique throughout the year, with the exception of during firearms, deer season, and turkey season. This is normally an early morning hunt with stand hunting in the afternoon, maximum of 2 people per guide with dogs. Success rate is 80 to 90%. So that's pretty nuts. Wow. So you're running through the bush with like a Bowie knife and a bunch of dogs running down these pigs. And of course, you know, there's a YouTube video you can click to, which is pretty brutal, man. Like, these things totally sound like, you know, this screaming child when you guys are like, completely demon-possessed kind of stuff, which I'm like, whoa, that's a little intense. So, something to look at. I don't know if I'm really ready for that at this particular level, but, you know, if you've got any more hog hunt sort of stories or any sort of feedback on the whole hog hunting thing, you can get me at newsreel@randradio.com. And don't bother with Sim, because, well, of course, he's vegan, so he would not be so into hunting down these particular hogs. I'm not too sure I am either, but, you know, you can chime in. I'm interested in what you got to say. Let's talk a little bit about the news, because that's why everybody downloaded the show. In mind control news, this is brutal. Now, they've been trying to mess around with all kinds of different methods of mind control. And of course, you know, genetics is one thing. They're trying to do a million different things with this. But this is really, really bizarre. The doctor sent this one in. You can control your urges for violence and sex using a tiny tangle of neurons located in the very ancient part of your brain. Now, it turns out this knot of nerds located in your hypothalamus can be controlled with a new gene therapy technique that uses flashes of light. Wow, what could possibly go wrong? This means that scientists may be on the verge of turning us into mindless soldiers, unable to stop ourselves from attacking anyone or anything that gets in our way. But this discovery is also the perfect shutdown command for people who can't control their violent urges. Either way you look at it, in 10 years, we could be manipulating people's most primal urge with beams of light. Interesting. That's pretty interesting, because, you know, TVs give off a lot of light. A group of neuroscientists in California and Seattle published a paper today in Nature showing how they use bursts of light to stimulate the hypothalamic attack area in the mouse brains. Basically, they use light to change the behavior of neurons in mouse hypothalamus in a technique called optogenetics that combined optics with the genetic manipulation. After undergoing optogenetic stimulation, the mice would attack anything introduced into their cage with them, other mice, even inanimate objects like a glove. What the scientists discovered, however, was that the attack area of the brain overlapped a lot of other parts that govern sexual desire. Electrical activity in the brain of a mouse that's about to attack looks very similar to a mouse that's about to mate. Uh-huh. With just a bit of tweaking, the scientists could convert the attack pattern to the mating power, thus shutting down an attack as quickly as they started it. Or death by bushki. Then they also found that mice who were already mating were largely immune to having their attack area stimulated with light. You could say you couldn't as easily turn a mating mouse into a fighting one. Yeah, man, because they're all getting laid. They don't want to be doing all this kind of stuff. Only male mice were tested in the study. So female activated neurons refer to the regions of sexual desire. Presumably, our mice were also heterosexual. Would it work on humans? Because of the optogenetic studies focus on the hypothalamus, ancient part of the brain that humans share with other mammals, it is likely scientists will seek a way to apply what they've learned in humans. Well, what we need to do is we need to figure out how to apply this to women. And then you'll have guys walking around with a set of goggles and a small hookup to, like, a wearable and going up to the hottest chicks in the bar saying, hey, you want to see something cool? Put this on for a minute. Flashy, 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 flashy. She's ripping your clothes off. Sounds, well, a little bit unethical, but, you know, is it any worse than trying to apply them with alcohol? I don't really know. But I do think that, you know, possibly trying to convince them to look through your ViewMaster may work, surprisingly, because they don't know that you're going to be, like, you know, trying to trigger a mating response with the hypothalamus, but I'd want to make sure that shit's out of beta, because the last thing you want to do is get the chick all, like, going rage virus on you because you downloaded the wrong program into the ViewMaster, and now, well, you know, she's breaking glasses, and she's gone crazy. Lady, I'm afraid I'm going to have to ask you to leave the store. Now, in robot takeover news, Pirate Ox sent this one in. Very, very good. Robots, now, the whole galaxy sent this one to me. Now, this, of course, sounds like it would be a good idea. Well, no, it doesn't even sound like it would be a good idea. In fact, it sounds really, really crazy. Robots could soon have an equivalent of their own internet and Wikipedia. European scientists have embarked on a project that let robots share and store what they discover about the world. Doesn't sound bad. Called RoboEarth. I like that. That's really good. Except for the fact that I just like it called Earth. Why do we have to call it Robo? Anyway, it will be a place where robots can upload data to where when they master a task and then can ask for help in carrying out new tasks. Researchers behind it hope that it will allow robots to come into service more quickly, armed with a growing library of knowledge about their human masters, and they share the plan. The idea behind the RoboEarth is to develop methods to help robots exchange and reuse knowledge, said RoboEarth researcher Dr. Marcus Weibel from the Swiss Federal Institute in Zurich. Most current robots see the world their own way, and there's very little standardization going on. He said most researchers using robots typically develop their own way for that machine to build up a corpus of data around the world. Thus, this, said Dr. Weibel, made it very difficult for roboticists to share knowledge for the field to advance rapidly because everyone's starting off solving the same problems. By contrast, RoboEarth hopes that showing how information that robots discover about the world can be defined so that any other robot can find it and use it. RoboEarth will be a communication system and a database. So that's great. So when you want to do the robotic, you know, supervillain takeover, you don't have to hack all the robots. Hell no. All you got to do is get inside this robot database, download, you know, your whole, like, kill all humans codec, and wait for everybody to be like, you know, if you go up to any robot and prompt it with something like, hey, I need to have an Afghanistan banana stand. And the robot goes, search term, Afghanistan banana stand. Oh, look, here's the virus code. Danger, Will Robinson. Danger, danger. Yeah, okay, so it's maybe not that plausible, but we're a ways out. And I seem to think that if I had a robot, I would definitely not be plugging it in to any sort of like Skynet, Pharmacom, large database where I no longer have control of what my robot thinks or gets data on, that sort of thing. And like people are like, what about robot rights? Robots don't have rights. Sorry, no robot rights. They're puppets. They're my little slaves. Absolutely. Yeah, thank you. Robots do not belong on the internet. Period. Get them out of there. Not supposed to be there. This is how Project 2501 started. Very bad idea. Very bad idea. I know it's beautiful and everything, but if I'm going to have a whole bunch of, like, crazy sex Borgs, I'm not going to have them all hooked up so they can talk to each other. That's just a bad idea. It's a bad, bad idea. Now, more with the bad ideas, we got an update going on from the pirates. Not the pirate party or those good people. No. We're actually talking about pirates. Now, people don't realize just how incredibly brutal the world is. Like, they don't really understand that, like, there's somewhere in the neighborhood between 4 and 10,000 pirate attacks every year. And I don't just mean against big ships. I'm talking about, like, against small vessels and things like this. And there's a lot of rogue states and piracy that's going on in the world. And now, it's starting to get a little bit more play. Of course, everybody's pissed off at the pirates in Somalia because, you know, they've been bringing in big money, millions of dollars, and they're changing up their tactics, and nobody really wants to know how to deal with these guys. And of course, Bucky Fuller sent a story about how they've changed their tactics again. And pirate news, Indian naval forces have shut down two Somali pirate motherships in as many weeks, operating close to the subcontinent, highlighting the increased range and sophistication of this scourge of the seas. The new concept, a mothership, is given to a hijacked ocean-going vessels that the pirates are using to extend their operations to and avoid counter-piracy efforts closer to Somalia. Both the motherships off the coast of India were Thai fishing vessels captured by pirates in April 2010. It's quite some time ago. While India's Navy scored two tactical victories, maritime experts say a more robust international strategy is needed in the face of the pirates' proven ability to adapt under military pressure. The problem has already cost governments and business an estimated $7 to $12 billion a year, with a B, and is raising costs along the vital sea lanes between Europe and Asia. It's a sign of the worsening situation, says P.K. Ghosh, the maritime expert of the Observer Research Foundation in New Delhi. While the numbers of incidents are going down, the pirate sophistication and their strategic reach are increasing dramatically. Very bad. Until recently, pirates had mostly used skiffs and small whaling boat operations close to shore to hijack ships for ransoms. The mothership idea, which uses the hijacked ship as a floating base for skiffs to launch further attacks, took off in November, said Dirk Steffen, director of the Hamburg, Germany office Risk Intelligence. They have used hijacked ships before in support roles, but in terms of using motherships in an offensive role, it's just not just as a pure support platform that is new. Motherships tend to be fishing vessels, small tankers, and cargo ships. The hijacked crew, of course, is kept on board. They're needed because the pirates often don't know how to work the larger ships, and because they could be used as human shields in encounters with Navy. So absolutely, why not have it populated with all these other people? So if the Navy shows up, they're going to wind up killing their own dudes. Big political nightmare, so they're going to use them as the human shield. This is a huge problem. And, everybody's looking for a politically correct way to try to sort this out. And it's just not going to happen. The same thing is going to be going on, like, right now, as we're speaking, right now in Egypt, as this show is recorded. Never mind the problems that I've had trying to get my stuff working. I mean, Mubarak just stepped out and said, yeah, I'm not stepping down, too bad. And I imagine there's going to be a whole lot of bloodshed going on in Egypt, and I really weep for that country because I think that, unless they actually take him out, I don't think it's going to stop. Maybe the military step in and like pull him out of power, but honestly speaking, I don't think that's going to happen. I really don't, because if they manage to force him out, it's going to send a big message to everybody else in the region that maybe they can throw out their leaders too, and nobody wants that to happen. Well, not the bad guys anyway. But I don't know what's going to happen next. I just hope that not a lot of people are going to get hurt, which I have a really, really bad, bad, bad feeling that 24 hours from this recording, there's probably going to be hundreds dead, and I'm not really happy about that. I'm not really thinking that's really fantastic, but that's probably what's going to happen. So it's unfortunate. Big prayers out to those in Egypt, and I hope that they can get their government sorted out. I still think this is a tremendous opportunity. Get over there with a small crew of very dedicated individuals and try to look for some treasure. Because there's lots of places that aren't going to be protected right now. And in the land of looting tombs and stuff like that, Egypt is a very, very good location for ancient treasures. You know, there's lots of dudes that say they know where there's... Now, I'm not saying we should take the stuff that's already, exposed. If it's already been discovered, then, that's somebody else's stuff. Well, it could be argued. I mean, really, it belonged to the pharaohs and blah, blah, blah. But if you can get into a region where they know that there's some secret temples, nobody's dug there yet, you manage to scam in there and get yourself some, a little bit of golden idol action on the go. A little bit of ancient treasure. Maybe some magic items. I'm just saying. Finders keepers in my world, man. But you gotta find it. And then, of course, you gotta get the pesky stuff out of the country. It's not like back in the day where you could just claim that you were an archaeologist and you could steal it and bring it back to Britain. No, no, no. No, no, now it's gonna be a lot more difficult. But with this big political upheaval, I'm telling you, lots of treasure. Lots of treasure going on. Now, of course, speaking of things breaking down, there's a lot of people who are really getting freaked out in the United States. Okay, they're getting really worried about this whole unified North America thing. That's really freaking them out. There's different bills that are coming forward that are really showing that up. Now, this is one that came out that I'm like, hey, this is pretty interesting. Because you're going to see a lot of... I really want to see the states stay united. The last thing I would want is to watch the United States no longer be united and just turn into this crazy balkanized patchwork and pull like just this huge North American version of Yugoslavia. We do not want that. But Fat Ninja sent in this Street Samurai news story. A Montana Republican has introduced a bill that would create a volunteer armed militia called the Home Guard that would answer directly to the governor or local sheriffs during the emergencies. State Representative Wendy Warburton introduced House Bill 278, which she said is just about local volunteers being prepared in case of an emergency to support the National Guard, support the sheriff, and support the governor as needed, the Associated Press reports. The governor would be required to recruit, mobilize, administer, train, discipline, equip, and supply the organized militia, which the AP estimates would cost the state about $45,000 a year. $45,000. That's nothing. Like, that is nothing. 45 grand a year, and you're going to try to mobilize a militia on that? Wow. On the upside, maybe you'd be allowed to use your own kit. Nick Wing, of the Huffington Post, points out the original bill referred to the groups as militias, but Warburton since changed the language to call them more neutral home guards. The bill describes how the forces would be divided into companies, and then platoons and squads. Each company would have a company flag, company creed, company colors, as well as a uniform with company insignias. Last month, another Montana Republican introduced a bill to give local sheriffs supremacy in their counties and requiring that federal employees shall obtain the county sheriff's permission to arrest, search, and seize. And this is slowly moving away from like a decentralized government position when it comes to the ability of force and use of force. So that's very, very interesting that that's coming down the pipe. I'd like to see if there's other states following the same sort of thing. And of course, there's a lot of people really freaked out in the states right now, so it's definitely something that, you know, hey, we're all not wearing Confederate hats anymore. For 45 grand, hey, I bet you're allowed to use your own kit. You could probably come up with some pretty groovy stuff. Now, let's talk about an Armageddon update. Now, of course, you may have remembered, you know, the massive oil spill. The largest oil spill in history, pretty much. So, that was like unbelievably bad. Nobody even knows how big the spill is, and everybody's downplayed it. Everybody's saying that, you know, they're trying to just really make this go away. They want to make this go away so bad it's not even funny. But then, of course, you come across a story like this, which I can't even believe this story here, but we're going to try to get through this. This is an Oilmageddon update. Thank you very much, name redacted. From a distance, the toxic goo looks like oil, but close up it smells like rotten eggs, wiggles like jelly. Scientists have no idea what it is or how it wound up in the northern Gulf of Mexico near Perdido Pass. Just off the Florida Panhandle coastline, within sight of Perdido Key, scientists have discovered an underwater mass of dead sea life that appears to be growing as microscopic algae and bacteria get trapped and die. Early samples indicate the glob is at least 3 feet thick and spans two-thirds of a mile parallel to the coast. No one knows where it came from or where it will go. Science are trying to determine if oil from last year's Deepwater Horizon disaster led to the glob, but tests so far have found no sign of oil. You know, I don't know, man. This whole thing sounds really weird to me. It seems to be a combination of sticky algae and bacteria. Said a chemical oceanographer at the University of South Florida, describing the substance as extremely sticky and toxic. While scientists have drawn no conclusion about the gooey mass's origin, they're not ruling out potential connection with the oil spill. You think? Oil gummed up and slicked out that part of the Gulf for 30 to 40 days, with the 3 month during 30 to 40 days for, during the 3 month well gusher, which pumped 186 million. To 227 million gallons of crude oil into the Gulf. And that's, again, just an estimate. Those are going by the official numbers. Nobody really knows how much oil was actually dumped into the Gulf. We do know it was the worst spill ever. And we do know that all the companies pumped chemicals that have long been banned into the ocean just to get rid of the chemicals because they don't have to get rid of them. So now they get kill two birds with one stone. They're able to, you know, dump all their chemicals. And we're going to be dealing with repercussions from this. We don't know all the ramifications, all the implications of a spill like this. Yeah, you think? He said other scientists plan to return to the glob in a few weeks for a few more samples. The equipment available on the last cruise was not long enough to reach the bottom of the mat. The bottom sediments could hold important clues about how the glob formed. Scientists do not have the time or equipment to map out the entire blob. This is fantastic. I can't believe this. So let me get this straight. You've got, like, in the same area where you've been having, like, the worst oil spill in history, you find this strange gelatinous blob which is killing everything in its path, but you just don't have the resources you need to properly map that out. We just, we haven't got the time or the equipment. Whatever, I'm sure it's not a big deal. It's definitely not related to that oil spill, though. Hell no. No, how could it be? You know, that's just ridiculous. That's crazy talk. I think that they, you know, this crazy oil spill had anything to do with this large expanding blob of death. Obviously it has nothing in common, you know. But that's what they expect us to believe. You know, I guess that's why they sell so many drugs on the news channel. Just a thought. So, moving past the Oilmageddon news, let's get into something even more cheerful, which is some plague news. Now, plague news is always a good time, because plagues are scary. They do a lot of bad things, because I'm not really afraid of big monsters, I'm afraid of microbes. Because they can really make you die in bad, bad, horrible ways. So, in plague news, thanks again to Name Redacted, a new type, now this is huge, a new type of mosquito discovered in Africa could further complicate the fight to control malaria. Now, this is a killer, okay? Malaria is a big deal. If you needed another reason not to go to Africa, here's a good one. The French researchers collecting mosquitoes from ponds near villages in Burkina Faso, West Africa, said they have identified a subtype of the Anopheles gambia, unlike any documented before. The mosquito is highly susceptible to infection with the malaria parasite. Like, it likes to rest outside, not indoors, and can therefore evade most current control methods. Groundy, he said that they're very susceptible to human malaria parasite. We know they belong to a species that has an exquisite preference for human blood. We know they're abundant in population. Dr. Vernick has said his team is not able to quantify how much malaria transmission of this new mosquito subtype is responsible for, but they feared it might be a major factor. What we can say is it's unlikely that they're harmless. Malaria is an infectious disease spread by mosquitoes that threaten up to half the world's population. Most of its victims are children under 5 in poor countries in sub-Saharan South Africa. The World Health Organization's latest malaria report found that some progress against the disease have been made over the past decade, while deaths estimated have dropped to 781,000 in 2009 from nearly a million in 2000. So good to know that we're getting new, harder, faster, stronger insects to spread malaria. Because, you know, hey, you just don't really have enough disease going on in the world right now that you need to have better, stronger, faster mosquitoes. Now, I'm wondering how this sort of occurred. How did they find this? Has this mosquito been around for a while? And I guess there's a lot of... That's, you know, if I was going to really get the tinfoil on, you look at the Georgia Guidestones, right? And the last thing they want to do is save lives in Africa. That's the last thing any of these global elite guys want to do. They don't want to save any lives in Africa. That's bull, man. They want to kill all those people as quickly as possible because they're worried about overpopulation. So, I'm wondering, you know, if you look at like how AIDS originally broke out and you look at all the World Health Organization immunization taskings that went on, there's definitely some sort of correlation going on there. So, I don't know. This is could be something pretty brutal. Not to mention, you get something like this and use it as a weapon. Do you imagine if you had some kind of plague-carrying insect that you could let go or to migrate to a new area? Especially with, like, mosquitoes or something? That could be very, very dangerous. You couple that with something like Katrina, you have the right kind of insect get loose there? Wow. We're talking, like, some pretty nasty situations, to be sure. Not as bad as this next story, which, again, it's one of those stories where I really wish Sim was here because I wanted to really, you know, really give him this one. This is, now even for me, who wanted to go out and go hog hunting, just, you know, for the experience of it, this is flesh fare news, which even I was like, oh wow, really? This is something else. I picked this up. It's coming from a New York restaurant. If you really love your meat, or pardon me, if you really loved your meal at one New York restaurant, you can now walk out of there with the skin of the animal that you ate. Marlowe & Sons, an eatery in the city's trendy Williamsburg neighborhood, wants clients to be able to remember their meals forever by purchasing items such as bags made from the hides of the cows and other animals served up from the kitchen. We want something people could enjoy beyond their dinner, Kate Hruling, wife of the owner, told AFP. They come in, they eat, and they leave. And they usually think of something else. So the bags really preserve the honor of that animal. Belts, wallets, hats, and sweaters using wool and rabbit fur will also be offered once the animal in question has been eaten. The idea will be a boon for struggling local tanneries in the New York fashion industry. Woo! Because I guess, you know, that New York fashion industry is pretty, they're hurting, you know, the New York fashion industry. But that, to me, is fairly flesh fair. I don't know why, I just sort of say, really? Like, really? So, oh well, you know, I guess I could go for some horse meat. I never liked horses. Now, let's talk about Robojet in Cyberpunk Kit. This is some exciting stuff. Good to see that we're going to eventually be bombed by robots. Of course, who are we worried about, you know, connecting to that internet? Well, Navy jets. Navy officials and military developers are beaming with smiles of the success of, for their proud papas of the newest military model. A fully robotic jet fighter, the X-47B, built by Northrop Grumman, completed its first successful test flight on February 4th at Edwards Air Force Base in California without the assistance of an onboard or remote human pilot. It's all automated. The aircraft's sleek, tailless design will make it harder to spot on radar. It proves a unique challenge for the unmanned aerial system, yet the X-47B pulled off a historic test flight with great success. And there's video as well. The task ahead will prove much harder. The U.S. Navy is looking to place the robotic jet fighter on aircraft carriers in the next decade, with ocean-located trials slated for 2013. From there, robotic jet fighters could prove to be valuable a valuable asset in the modern military that's increasingly automating its approach to war. This is, you can kind of see, if I was one of these jet jockeys, I wouldn't be too happy about this stupid thing. Furthermore, I don't know if a jet could really outfly a human yet. One day it would be able to, for sure, but I don't know right now. The X-47B made a short 29-minute, 5,000-foot flight without difficulty, taking a few passes around the airstrip. At this point, Northrop Grumman was really only testing the guides and navigation systems, but according to the press release, they'll be expanding the UAS aero repertoire in the months ahead before moving the aircraft to Maryland later this year. The footage, the video may seem pretty calm, but remember, you're watching a high-quality fighter jet fly without any human assistance, either in or outside of the craft. This is the hunter killer of the future. Part of the Unmanned Combat Air System Demonstration Project, UCAS-D, the X-47B is something beyond the drones and UAVs you see in action today. It is not a spy, nor a single-target hunter killer. It is a complete jet fighter. The 60-foot wingspan, 40,000-foot altitude, and 2,100 nautical mile flight range, not to mention the 4,500-pound weapon bays, speak of an aircraft that would be a high-end component of the military in the future. It will have more range, though less firepower, than the F-18 Hornets commonly used today. Imagine wings of these fighters being launched from aircraft carriers positioned out of reach of anti-carrier missiles and striking targets they need for active human judgment. That's a scary, awe-inspiring idea that we could see come to reality in the next decade. Admiral Gary Roguehead has pushed for these automated fighters to sea duty by 2018. It's less than 10 years out, people. Pretty significant stuff to see that kind of tech hitting the ground. And these are robots that will be bombing people. That's just the truth. So we're waiting, and it makes the most sense, I suppose, that there'd be jets. That's an environment that robots would lend themselves very quickly to. But, wow. If you take a look at this thing, too, it looks pretty UFO-ish. Like, it's pretty intense looking. But it'll be interesting to see what comes of this, to be certain. Now, let's talk about a little bit something that might be better for power for everyone, which is wave generators. Wave generators are these generators that take their power from the ocean. So using a small tank of water in a Colorado laboratory, thank you, IceHawk, for this story, by the way, Air Force researchers, again the Air Force, have captured 99% of the energy of a model ocean wave, proving it's possible to use aeronautical principles to harness the power of the oceans. Wow, capturing 99% of the power of waves, that's a lot of juice. The researchers used cycloidal turbine, a lift-based energy converter, to grab the energy of a simulated deep ocean wave. It can change direction almost instantly, and its structure is similar to that of a Voith-Schneider propeller, which is used to power tugboats. Interesting. It involves a main power shaft and a few hydrofoils whose angle of attack can be adjusted to meet the wave. The shaft is a line parallel with the wave's crest, according to the paper describing the system, presented at the American Society of Mechanical Engineering Conference. The entire concept is not unlike a helicopter propulsion system, which involves shifting the angle of attack on the main rotor blades to move the helicopter sideways or to pitch forward and back. That explains why Air Force aeronautic researchers are involved. Some of the people working on the project have studied fluid dynamics for military aircraft and NASA spacecraft, according to an Air Force news release. The research is part of the National Science Foundation's funded project to build the world's first free-floating submerged wave energy converter. In a series of experiments, the system was able to convert 95% of incoming waves' energy into mechanical energy, driving the shaft. The rest of the energy was lost in harmonic waves, but after some tweaks, the Air Force team, led by Dr. Stefan Siegel, was able to improve the energy conversion rate to 99%. The work was performed in a small tank at 1/1300th scale version of the system size in the ocean. The team's grant runs through September, but results were so promising the Department of Energy is providing $400,000 to build a bigger simulator tank, 1/10th scale. This next step is to improve the converter's survivability in severe weather and to study methods of transferring energy to the grid. But capturing the power of the oceans, very interesting stuff. It would also be cool if there's a way you could, you know, somehow use this to power ships. I mean, that'd be kind of cool, especially if you could, like, recapture energy or... I know there's a lot of physics involved with stuff like that, but wow. Now, this next link is going to be something that's just going to make you really, really happy you stuck around for the show for. This is pretty cool. Now, I covered this particular type of stuff before, but it wasn't available to buy, and it's pretty cheap. So for those of you who are listening live, get ready to go check this out, because you're going to like it. It's called X-I-O-N, okay? Although Zion, this is a body armor. This is what this is, and this is some sexy, sexy stuff. Although Zion originally designed products for stunt applications, the Zion protective gear products serve many applications. Everybody confronted with the risk of getting injured, either professional or leisure-wise, will definitely benefit from our protective productive line. Examples of applications are stunts, extreme sports, martial arts, free running, parkour team sports, rock climbing, cyclists, stage and screen combatants, actors, and many more. This stuff is so sexy. Basically, all situations where rigid or bony parts of the body could be confronted with impact. Because parts of the body always stick out and do not have a soft barrier like muscles or fat to reduce the impact, they will suffer the most damage and should be protected. Impact protection has traditionally been provided by bulky, rigid protection. This is not ideal for forces, but forces a compromise between the amount of protection you accept and the freedom of movement you can enjoy. XION Zion was looking for a more flexible, less bulky solution. We're developing protective clothing, which is specifically designed to wear underneath your clothes. So this is concealable impact armor. The D3O padding is ideal for Zion product range because they are very thin, between 7 and 10 millimeters. And for more specs on the clothing, you can check them out. Now, this is just the coolest thing ever. There's a video there where Buddy's like falling to his knees. You could do some serious Ghost in the Shell shit with this stuff. And you could suit yourself out for less than $1,000. And fits under a t-shirt. This is some WOG kit right here. I was pretty hot looking at this. And it'd be nothing for you to make some custom armor out of this. I mean, you take 2/4-inch sheets of Lexan, put some of this Zion putty in the middle of it, and boom, baby. I'd like to take that to the range and see what kind of impact that can handle, because that is pretty neat. And unless you're getting shot at, which, to be real, how many times are you actually shot at? Not that often. Usually it's, you know, you're running or you're jumping around or you're doing any kind of sports or God knows what you're up to. But basically you're going to get hit with bats, you know, bars, whatever. This is the Batman body armor right here. Very, very cool stuff. So if you check out the video, it's also rad because, you know, you got some Rob Zombie in there and everything else. Very, very cool. Now, I didn't mention, but I should mention now, about the intro to the show. Before the show started, for those of you who have downloaded the show, there's a clip on there from a court down in the States. And this is a story which I'm pulling off of The Wire. But what had happened is, this is what happens when you run into problems with private prisons. And they had a juvie detention center where they were taking in kids, right? Because if, you know, you do something wrong and you're juvenile, you can be shipped off to these private institutions. Back in the day, it was places like the back-end control center and stuff like that. But now they're very, very common. So there's these private institutions that handle juveniles. Well, what was happening was that there were some judges that are getting kickbacks to send kids to certain prisons. So the kid shows up, the judge looks at him and goes, yeah, you're doing 3 months. And because now the state pays to have the kid go through 3 months of rehabilitation, the prison, who, you know, is happy the judge sent him up for 3 months, they make sure the judge gets a little bit of a kickback
for every, you know, couple of months they send kids to him for, because they're making good money off these kids. So why not, you know, why not just give him a little kickback, and that way the judges keep sending him kids. This is the level of corruption that you have to watch out for. Very hard to stop. Very, very hard to stop. And the stuff that you catch is only one-tenth of what's actually going on. So this, if it'll happen with juvenile kids, what makes you think that this won't happen with privatized prisons? Very, very scary tufts. It's a good idea to check out the film Fortress if you haven't seen it already. Very much applicable to this particular story. Now, in order to avoid that kind of a thing, we're going to get into today's daily hack, which is your do-it-yourself infrared light. Thank you very much, Boone. Now, this is a really cool daily hack that got sent in here. This is an IR hack. This is one of the best ways to create an IR light source from regular lights, which is kind of cool because, of course, you go out and you can get yourself infrared night vision goggles and things of that nature. But, you know, you're somewhat limited by how you can, you know, how far you can see because, of course, it requires infrared light. Now, the neat thing about infrared light is, of course, you can't see with the naked eye. So you can actually have your yard super lit up with IR and nobody else can see it, which is always cool. You get infrared light sticks and stuff like that, but it all costs money. Now, since a normal flashlight bulb emits a broad enough spectrum to include visible light and IR light, it basically comes down to filtering. They explore the different light sources, different materials and depth, along with a great picture show to show results. This is a great resource if you need to do some night vision for cheap. And as we all know, cheap night vision is a really, really good thing. Everybody likes to be able to see in the dark. Good equalizer for everybody else. And let's not worry, that's all I got for you today. But don't worry, I'll be back next week to make sure you get the news you need to survive. This has been a free podcast brought to you by the Wogs Who Care. If you cannot donate to the show, please distribute. But if you can donate, please do so by clicking on the Dark Atlas website. Or you can go to any site inside of Rant Media. Or you can send an envelope to Rant Media Studios, Box 95089, 370 East Broadway, Vancouver, BC, Canada, V5T1W0. I do have, as well, if you ever swing by the Rant Media website, check out some of the media we got in there. We got hours and hours and hours of stuff for you to check out. I got another digital baptism, which I was really happy about, because like more and more people getting digital baptisms. I enjoy that. It's always a good time to get digital baptisms on the go. And this one is going to Clarinet Marvel Girl, who is now Ballerina. And Ballerina is spelled B4LL4R!N4. Now this, before you go, Ballerina, before you go too far, make sure you check that out on the Cyberpunk checklist and see what the Cyberpunk term for Ballerina is. That's the interesting one. So I'll let you go find that on your own. And of course, once again, I have to thank the Army of the Flying Monkeys for their assistance in gathering data. If you have information you would like to send me, you can reach me at newsreel@rantradio.com. And be sure to sign up for the Rant newsletter by sending an email to info@rantradio.com. If you like the music in the background, make sure you check out some Psytrance, because, hey, that's the music that we listen to here on Newsreel. And in keeping with my, you know, hog-killing, you know, flesh fair, wear the leather jacket of the meat you eat kind of stuff, we're going to fade out today with a track from Tool called Disgustipated, which I kind of enjoy this one. So remember, everyone, we will never defeat the enemy if we're at each other's throats. So until next time, that's what Server said. End of line.